In the early 1990s, biologists didn't think wild tigers would last long enough to see the new millennium. But rather than giving up, scientists focused their conservation efforts in places where they felt they could make a difference. The result? The Save the Tiger Fund says today there are still healthy tiger populations in Russia, Nepal, Bhutan, and southern India. John Seidensticker is senior scientist at the Smithsonian National Zoological Park and chairs the Save the Tiger Fund Council. John, let's use the Russian Far East as an example. Why did your conservation efforts there work out so well?
Well, I think we had a variety of approaches. First of all, we supported work that was ongoing by the Wildlife Conservation Society. So we understood exactly what tigers needed to survive. We invested in what are now called the Amba patrols. Amba is a Russian word for tiger. These patrols were a new approach to kind of treat tiger poachers as a in the same way you would treat insurgents. So we got people who knew about conservation security involved and supported their efforts. We launched through local NGOs a broad public awareness campaign of the tiger's plight. And we've supported long-term monitoring, so we know exactly how we're doing. When we have problems, and sometimes there are tigers that get themselves in trouble with people, but we have supported rapid response teams so that we don't have a situation where you're killing the wrong tiger or many tigers. If there's a tiger that's in trouble, you go after the right tiger, and then you make decisions about whether it can be translocated or whether it can be rehabilitated or whether it needs to be euthanized. And so I think there was all of this that has given us this sense that the tiger has a fighting chance in the Russian Far East now. And believe me, in the early 90s, nobody gave what they call the Amur tiger or the Siberian tiger much of a chance.
Now, in many of the places where tigers live, there are also people. How do tigers interact with people when they're sharing the landscape?
Tigers are the very specialized predators. They can't live on small ungulates, and they don't live on rabbits. They have to have big pigs, deer, in some cases wild cattle. When they have adequate prey, they don't get themselves usually in trouble eating people's cattle, nor people. People have lived for years right next to tigers. And it's when there's this crunch for resources that leads to most of our problems with problem tigers.
How does the Save the Tiger Fund work to influence those human-tiger interactions so that both parties come out unscathed?
Well, let's just start with the Save the Tiger Fund. We've worked out kind of a formula that we'd call the five C's. We need core areas where tigers are basically undisturbed. You need the connections between core areas, forests that connect core areas. The third C is you have to have the support of local communities. The fourth C is that because tigers are top carnivores, wherever they live and wherever you manage to preserve them, they act as umbrella species for, you know, just about everything else that lives there. So you preserve biological diversity in general. And then the fifth C is we need communication so that we have a broad public awareness. We're not going to save tigers without everybody's involvement. You need also the support of local communities. And local communities have to buy into the process. In the process of conserving tigers, you have to improve the lot of local communities. And so our effort has been to invest where we can in these buffer zone areas and these connecting areas in ways that local people come out of it ahead too.
Can you briefly tell me a success story here of conserving a tiger population in an area that you thought was very difficult?
Yeah, I'll go back to where I first went to Nepal back in 1972. And the Royal Chitwan National Park was not yet quite declared. It had been a former hunting reserve. And it was just an area that was just in this overall mix. These buffer zone areas have been turned into these absolute commons, and the forests have been overrun with cattle. And I was lucky enough to go back a couple of years ago to look at this, and there has been a marvelous transformation. And it was really exciting because here was a piece of land that had really taken on new and added value because they had become actually local guardians, if you will, of wildlife that lived in and around the reserve. As a result of their efforts, these buffer zones were changing into good wildlife habitat as well as areas that were providing grass and firewood and places for them to graze their more select breed of cattle. It was just an area that was working. It was working because we had local buy-in. People were doing it themselves. They were empowered. The money that they were gaining from the tourist revenues of looking at these areas were going into health clinics and to improving schools. Women were being trained to have vocations. It's a model for what can be done to include local people in a formula that ultimately benefits tigers and their prey.
Now, you've done field work in Nepal, Indonesia, India. What's it like to see one of these animals out in the wild?
It's always like a dream. When you see a tiger, it's they kind of come into your consciousness, and just as easily they sort of fade away. And there's all that power and grace and beauty, and it's, you know, it can explode in any minute, and it's just a marvelous, splendid experience.
Conservation biologist John Seidensticker is senior scientist at the Smithsonian National Zoological Park and chair of the Save the Tiger Fund Council. Thanks for taking this time with me today.
Hey, thank you.
Oh, tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night. What immortal hand or eye could frame thy fearful symmetry? What distant deeps or skies burnt the fire of thine eyes? On what wings do we aspire? What the hand dare seize the fire? And what shoulder and what art could twist the sinews of thy heart? Tiger, tiger,